How can we fill the 400-year gap between the Old and New Testaments? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for September is the Apocrypha, the Lutheran edition with notes. You can find out more about this new resource at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Apocrypha by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for September, the Apocrypha, the Lutheran edition with study notes. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's one of the most famous stories, I guess, simply because of its drama. You got a city that is walled up, the people are inside, and there's another people outside. It's, well, from their perspective, inside Jericho, it's the invading army of the Israelites. Jericho is a strong city. It's about as strong as you can get at that time in the world. And really, I don't think those people in Jericho had anything to worry about. They were fortified. They were ready. They could take a siege. They could wait them out, and they could. It wouldn't be easy, but they wouldn't have to necessarily worry about eventually being conquered. And yet, within about a week, they are. And those walls that they had trusted in are gone. They're down. They're flat, as God promised they would be. The question kind of remains here in this famous story of Sunday school lore and of the Old Testament, Joshua chapter 6. Who really conquered Jericho? Joining us to answer that question and to walk through Joshua chapter 6, Pastor Tom Baker, Director of Development for the Concordia Mission Society and host of the radio show called Law and Gospel. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
Who did really conquer Jericho in this story in Joshua chapter 6?
Well, with my three E's of exegesis, Emmaus, and ecclesia, Emmaus means Jesus is at the center of everything. I don't even have to look at the text, Todd. Jesus.
He knocked the walls down.
Well, it's kind of interesting. They didn't get knocked down. They just fell straight down. But it has to be Jesus.
So explain that, because we've talked many times about these three E's, and you say that because of this, that section you call Emmaus, Jesus stands at the center of this story.
Yes. Unfortunately, the Sunday school lesson begins with chapter 6, and Jesus appears three verses before that.
Tell us about that.
It's chapter 5. It came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, a man, and that's capitalized in most English translation, stood opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" He said, "No, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come." And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, "What does my Lord say to his servant?" Then the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, "Take your sandal off your foot to the place, for the place where you stand is holy." And Joshua did so. If this doesn't remind you of Moses at the burning bush, where the angel of the Lord he's referred to is there, which we know is the second person of the Trinity, here we have him calling himself the commander of the army of the Lord. And what's really interesting with that word commander in the Hebrew, it can be translated as prince. And all of a sudden, we find the name of Jesus in Isaiah 9:6. "Unto us a child is born," and then the lengthy name, and here's the last part, Todd, "Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Commander of Peace," or Prince of Peace. You can translate it either way.
So, with the kind of the proper understanding of who's really going to be fighting this battle in place, tell us a bit of the story. You say that we ought to be reading all of these stories looking for a promise, and the promise for this one is right up front, isn't it?
Absolutely. God tells them that they're going to march around the city, and that, which is really interesting, he has Joshua taking a look at the city. in all its grandeur, and he says to Joshua, see, I've given you the city. Which, you just wonder for a second, what do you mean he's giving you the city? Look how strong it is. But you know what's really interesting? The people have locked the doors. And this is really, I think, God wanted them to lock the doors for two reasons. The purpose for the destruction of Jericho and the Canaanites is really clear from God's point of view, and that is so the Israelites will not get infected with the idolatry and the false teaching of these people. With the doors locked, they couldn't go inside and do any conversation. But the other thing is, with the doors locked, they couldn't get out. So when the walls fell, they were easy pickings for the for Israel.
So God has said to Joshua, even before the kind of six-day march begins around the city, even before they've done a thing, he's already told Joshua, the city is yours.
Yes, he's already told him ahead of time. And that's why my theme from a law gospel point of view here is eyes of faith trump the eyes of sight.
What did Joshua see with the eyes of sight, and what did God intend for him to see with the eyes of faith?
With the eyes of sight, he saw an impregnable fortress. I mean, this was big walls. He couldn't climb them. He couldn't go through them. There weren't windows to get through. The doors were shut. But then with eyes of faith, remember what faith's object always is. It's always a promise from God. And, you know, they just went through the Jordan. This is the first city they're going to be attacking. And this generation of Israelites seemed to have the kind of faith that the previous one didn't, which meant them to go around another 38 years in the wilderness. So with eyes of faith, you interpret reality from God's point of view rather than from a human commonsensical point of view.
Well, in that vein, Tom, it's kind of a ridiculous way to wage war. You bring out your holy ark, which they have there that has led them in. You get seven priests, and they got their seven trumpets. And then you just kind of march around as a big assembly, the city, on seven consecutive days, hoping that on the seventh day, finally, having done nothing but make a bunch of noise, apparently, the walls are going to come tumbling down.
Well, it's even worse than that, because we figure that Jericho was about 9 to 12 acres in length. So it was about a half to a 1 mile in circumference. They went around it only once each day, which would be less than an hour, depending on how many armed men they had with them. But just once in a day. And I don't know, you're familiar with VeggieTales?
Not so much.
Yes, it's got a delightful video of the fall of Jericho. The inhabitants of Jericho are standing up on the walls, and they sound Italian. And they're making fun of all the Israelites just walking around, not saying anything. They're making fun of them. By the way, as an aside, the creator of VeggieTales has now publicly apologized and repented for the legalistic tone of many of the videos for which he was responsible. I think he would be a great guest to put on Issues, etc.
Yeah, thanks for the suggestion. So here are the people marching around. What's the place of the ark here? We talked about what the place of the ark was in entering the land. What's the role of the Ark of the Covenant here?
The ark is in the midst of the people. It isn't at the front. It comes behind the priests, and behind them are the armed forces. So what you have here is God being at the very center. There's no way that you can give credit to the people of Israel for bringing down the walls. The ark represents none other than Jesus Christ himself.
So the promise is that the city will be destroyed on the seventh day. Now, if we go to verse 15 of Joshua chapter 6, on the seventh day they arose early at the dawn of day and marched around the city in the same manner seven times. It was only that day that they marched around the city seven times, and at the seventh time, when the priests had blown the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city." He's repeating the same promise he heard a week earlier, isn't he?
Exactly. The fact that they would shout is so surprising to me, because here's these big walls, and you know, there were some people who thought that the sound waves brought the walls down. That's really ridiculous. God brought the walls down, and we're not sure if he used a natural means or not, but they came straight down, the Hebrew says. They didn't fall over, and that was kind of good, because then they were able to go in and get Rahab. But the more important point that you just made a good point of is, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. In other words, all credit goes to Jesus again. So, and in fact, remember, Joshua, the name Joshua in the Greek is Jesus. So it's really interesting. If you wanted to do a paraphrase, then Jesus said to the people, shout, for Jesus has given you the city.
Two different Jesuses, right?
Exactly. Well said.
Pastor Tom Baker is our guest. We're talking about the fall of Jericho in Joshua chapter 6. It's Tuesday afternoon, September the 25th. I invite your questions or comments. We are coming to you live. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Or a tweet at @IssuesETC. You can see already how central the promise of God is. He has spoken it once to Joshua, and then, having followed the Lord's command on the last day, just as God had promised would happen, Joshua reminds them of the promise. The Lord has given you the city. Even before the walls begin to fall flat, the promise is as certain as if it has already happened. And lo and behold, as we'll find out on the other side of the break, when the people shout, the walls come down. Rahab the prostitute, who kind of comes in from a different part of the story, is spared. We'll find out why. And we'll finish off the story of the fall of Jericho with Pastor Tom Baker right after this.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Where doctrine is life. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, is a quarterly publication for the Confessional Lutheran, and they have a special 20th anniversary CD. This CD contains every issue of Logia for the last 20 years. It's a PDF file with search capabilities and bookmarks. This special anniversary CD is an excellent addition to your theological library. You can pre-order it for just $40. That's 50 cents per issue. Find out more at logia.org, logia.org.
Ah, the sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
the hymn, What Is This Bread?, sung by the University a cappella choir, playing right now at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Well, here's what Brian in St. Louis posted recently on his Facebook page about Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world. He said, do you like great hymns and church music? Then go to LutheranPublicRadio.org, where you can hear great hymns and church music 24/7. It's even set to the church year, so when it's Christmas, it'll play Christmas hymns. Pentecost right now, it'll play Pentecost hymns, etc. Oh, he says, and just because it's called Lutheran Public Radio doesn't mean it's only for Lutherans. Every type of Christian will enjoy this, so click on the link below and check it out today. That's what Brian wrote recently. And then Brian posted this link to Facebook, the Facebook fan page for Lutheran Public Radio, facebook.com/Lutheran Public Radio. Now, Brian has an opportunity upon doing this to win a 4-CD set of 45 hymns titled Heirs of the Reformation. It's a contest during the month of September for Lutheran Public Radio, and we're asking you to help us promote the Facebook page for LPR. Here's how you can enter, just like Brian. Like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Lutheran Public Radio. Invite your Facebook friends to listen to LPR. Send the text of your Facebook post and the number of your Facebook friends to contest@issuesetc.org. contest@issuesetc.org, and we will give away a 4-CD set of 45 hymns to the contestants with the best Facebook post and the contestant with the most Facebook friends. We'll announce the winners Monday, October the 1st. Pastor Tom Baker is our guest 10 more minutes in this hour of Issues Etc., talking about the fall of Jericho. Why is Rahab the prostitute, a prostitute of all people, and eventually her family as well, why are they spared when everyone else in Jericho is destroyed by God's command?
I think most people would say she was spared because of the good work she did in protecting the spy. But I have a law gospel thinking here that God never really commends anybody for a good work, primarily. It's always the faith behind the work, and he never condemns anyone for sin. It's always because of the unbelief behind the sin. And the evidence I would give for that is Hebrews 11:31. It doesn't say by obedience the harlot Rahab did not perish, but by faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe. Because if you read Joshua 2:8-11, she really believed in the true Lord. She says, I know that the Lord has given you the land. And by the way, she uses the word Yahweh there, the name of God. And that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. And so he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. The other thing I like to say about Rahab, you know, you always take a look, why does God have certain things in the Bible? Like the book of Ruth, for example, is a good one. And one of the main reasons Ruth is in there is because had Ruth not married Boaz, the line to Jesus would have been gone. Now, would you like to guess who the mother of Boaz was?
Who was it?
Rahab. Isn't that amazing?
I had no idea, Tom.
No, it's that's because you've never read the book of Matthew. Hey, I didn't either until I studied this. It didn't hit me until then. Listen to this. Matthew 1. Solomon begat Boaz by Rahab. She's in the genealogy of Jesus Christ, a woman who is twice scorned by God, twice under a ban. Number one, she's a Canaanite, and number two, she's a prostitute. But of course, we also believe in the God who took a murderer named Saul and made him apostle to the Gentiles and the Jews. God just doesn't think. And look at what he's done with you and me, Todd. He's made us pastors.
Yeah. Okay, so what's happening here, picking up on something you said earlier and then what you just said here, you said Jesus who actually conquers the city, he's the one who appears as commander of the Lord's armies. And so, in fact, Jesus is in the Old Testament, appearing in the Old Testament here in this Jericho incident, precisely in order to preserve his own bloodline to which he will come through the Virgin Mary.
That is an excellent point that a lot of people just kind of skip over, but it's right there in Matthew 1.
Okay, the city falls, and then this is harder stuff to swallow, Tom, especially in the realm of the law and unbelief that you mentioned of before. The entire city is destroyed. In fact, the entire city is burned, and no one is spared save Rahab and her family. And the only thing they preserve are the gold and the silver utensils and things like this, but they are warned not to sully themselves with idolatry in doing so. And it's so thorough that Joshua will end that sixth chapter by even saying, pronouncing a curse on someone who would try to rebuild the city. What's going on?
Once God destroys something, anybody trying to bring it back to its former glory would therefore be one who is opposed to what God has done. God, remember, God leaves memorials all over the place, the 12 stones, etc., etc. Well, here, Jericho is a memorial to all the rest of the people in Canaan that this is not a God with which you can fool around with. But, you know, what's so amazing, it's not in this Sunday school lesson, Todd, because I always like finding law and gospel against Israel. There's very little law accusation against Israel until the next chapter, and guess what? A character ends up taking some of that gold and silver and hiding it in his tent as though God doesn't know it.
So is the purpose of the ban against taking these articles, God says it's going to be holy to the Lord, consecrated to the Lord. Is the purpose precisely to guard these people from what would happen to them inevitably, idolatry?
The Hebrew word there for the things that God doesn't want them to use means those items that were used in worship, he banned them. And therefore, the only thing they were allowed to take was the precious metal, the gold, etc., for the future building, of course, of the temple. But at this point, they weren't to take any of the idols or any of their kind of worship materials.
With about a minute here, the final verse of chapter 6 says, "So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was in all the land." How should we rightly understand that?
I think the word "his" should be capitalized. I think it's God's fame spread throughout all the country, because that's what Rahab said. She says, well, we heard about you guys going to the Red Sea. They even knew about that. Then you went through the Jordan, and we're all kind of frightened to death here. You know, he is the true God. And Joshua himself would be embarrassed to say, yes, I'm really glad my fame. The one thing I want to make, the ancient church saw Jericho as a preview of the last day and the second coming of Jesus. I would like to think, though, no, it is a preview of the cross and resurrection, and our Jericho, when all the enemies against us took place, was our baptism.
With about 30 seconds, what do you mean by that?
I mean that what Jesus did on the cross, he got us a lot of benefits, including no longer eternal death. And he shares that with us through the sacraments of the Lord's Supper. And in baptism, he promises that you receive the gift of those benefits. So you're not just getting simple water, but water comprehended once more by the Word of God. And remember, the commander is holding a sword. And what does it say in Ephesians 6? Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit. So we shout, and the Lord works through us.
With just a few seconds, what pastoral advice can you give to our Sunday school teachers about this week's lesson on the fall of Jericho? Just a few seconds here, Tom.
I would encourage them to show baptism as the means of our Jericho, where the walls of death and destruction and our sin came tumbling down, and it's all because of Jesus, the Holy One, who wasn't in the ark, but upon the cross and from the empty tomb.
Pastor Tom Baker is Director of Development for the Concordia Mission Society, host of the radio program called Law and Gospel. You'll find a link to Law and Gospel under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. And next week, we'll talk with Pastor Baker about the Old Testament prophetess Deborah. Tom, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Folks, if you appreciate our weekly Sunday school lessons, Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. You can donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. Send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. The address again, LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. You can also make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Dr. Andrew Steinman about the apocryphal book Judith and some additions to the Old Testament book of Daniel that are also found in the Apocrypha. Should make for very interesting conversation with Dr. Andrew Steinman tomorrow on the program. Jesus is there in the Old Testament. He is not leaving it up to Joshua or to the people or to the circumstances or accidents of history. He is seeing the promise that he has made from the beginning to our first parents of salvation through him, through his incarnation, through his perfect life, through his suffering, through his death, through his resurrection. He's seeing that promise through every step of the way. He even intervenes to destroy the wicked city of Jericho, but to save one inhabitant who would prove to be part of his bloodline, by which he would come into human flesh to be the sacrifice for our sins through the womb of the Virgin Mary. Jesus is seeing the promise for our salvation all the way through to the end. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
What is the biggest misconception about the worship wars? I've written an article for the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Behind the Music, The Real Worship War. You can read it by subscribing to the Issues Etc. journal. Just look for the subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The latest journal also contains Hisham Chihab's article, From Muslim Extremist to Follower of Jesus. Subscribe to the online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.